Advent is a special time of the year, a time of joyous preparation as we get ready to welcome He who is the light of the world. And in His words, according to the Gospel of St. John, "He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." I was reading Pope Benedict's message for Christmas 2005 when suddenly I understood the symbolism of Christmas lights. Yes, the ones that adorn our Christmas trees, homes, streets and squares. They serve, he points out, to recall the true light which is about to enter our homes and our hearts.
As we prepare with joy to celebrate the birth of the Saviour in our families and in our communities, may each of us make an effort to perceive the true value of the Christmas traditions that are part of the patrimony of our faith and of our culture, so that we can transmit them to the new generations. In particular, in seeing city streets and squares decorated by dazzling lights, let us remember that these lights recall another light, invisible to our eyes, but not our heart. While we admire and light up the candles in church, or the lights on the crib or the Christmas tree, may our souls let in the true spiritual light that has been given to all men and women of goodwill.
Light is a beautiful symbol, one we can all relate to and make our own. Or can we? What about the millions of people who live in total or partial darkness because they are blind or visually impaired? One such person is Sean O'Donnell, the director of Catholic Blind Services, who seems never to have lost sight of the light of the world and has made it his mission to help other blind and visually impaired people to live out their Christian vocation and to assist the Church in her ministry of evangelization and mission.
Catholic Blind Services, or as it's affectionately known, CBS, started in the year 2000 as a response to the ever-growing requests for pastoral and spiritual needs of blind, visually impaired people to be answered.
Now Sean does precious work in the fulfilment of this mission. But before coming to that, he has a truly enlightening outlook as regards living his life. He elaborated upon it in response to the observation that he doesn't look visually impaired.
It's always a contradiction in terms. There's a wonderful bishop who I will save his name, who once said, you know, you don't look blind. And I said, but you don't look stupid. And he sat back and realised, as I said, you don't see a deaf person because you don't see the hearing aid behind the ear. So when they walk down the street and you say hello and they walk past you, you think that in another world they're rude or they're ignorant. When a blind person walks past you, you automatically see a guide dog, a white cane, dark glasses, or somebody holding on to somebody else. But what you don't realise is there's at least 1 million people in Britain who have a registered visual impairment who don't subscribe to all those stereotypes of image and also have the thick spectacles. My eyesight is very poor, it's less than 5%. And yet, I used to have a guide dog, I use a cane, although in the last 2 or 3 years I had an injury to my left arm, which causes it to be very difficult to use a cane. So I walk very slowly, especially here in Rome, and pray God I don't walk into anything, and cross when other people cross, so I won't take the risk. As Professor John Hull, formerly of Birmingham University, would say, you have 1 foot in the blind world, and you have another foot in the main world. And that's a contradiction in terms.
And is that an advantage or a disadvantage?
To me, I think it's neither, because we live in a world where people want to have political correctness, and I think PC has gone mad. I was at a conference one day when a university professor from Dublin said, it's wonderful to have a visually challenged person in the room. And I whispered to my neighbour, who's he on about? They said, you. But I said, I'm not visually challenged. The challenge is for society to accept people for who they are, not the other way around. And the church has always taught that. The Jubilee document for the disabled from Pope John Paul II talked about cherishing the members of the community. It did not say challenging them. And you can cherish without saying they are challenged. Yes, we are challenged to live in society, just like a left-handed person, which I am, is challenged to live in a right-handed world.
Sean says that it is amazing how man has used historical methods and instances of life to create a rule for the 21st century.
And this brings back to the PC world of being politically correct. What is a challenge? Was it a challenge for Bartimaeus to actually sit on the side there of the street in Jericho and cry out? Was it the challenge of Zacchaeus to do the same? He felt he had the same entitlement to see Christ on the street as anybody else. It's society that tends to decide who has the entitlements. And it's not just about disability, it's about all sorts of things in life. Homelessness, racism, etc.
So if somebody is blind or has visual impairment, what are the stresses, strains, challenges, or whatever word you like to use, of coping with a society that has a different concept of sight?
There are challenges in that way, and I think challenge is the right word. I think it's important to differentiate the word challenge from, say, being visually challenged, because that is often singling a person's disability out. But just like anybody else has challenges in life, being a single parent with three children, the same applies to an older person with epilepsy, dyslexia, the same with a blind person. The challenges are numerous, and they're different from one blind person to the next. It depends on their physical strength, if they have any other health conditions. And let's assume that everything is normal. The only difference for that person is they are either partially sighted or totally blind. Somewhere along the line, they will have had some form of rehabilitation, if that is the right word to use. If you are blind from birth, you adapt straight away, just like a baby learns the language of the country they're born in and the people around them. Someone who lives with partial sight has to make decisions about, or has to have decisions made for them at an early age, especially children, about integrated education or segregated education. Being careful about how you do things, especially in the kitchen, making adaptations. More often than not, the challenge is to get others to leave us to get on with things that we can manage. And also the challenge is to accept there are things we just can't do so well, and owning up to it. And that's a challenge for everybody in general about what are our limitations.
And what about life in the church? Apart from cherishing those who are challenged, does the church make things easier for them?
I find in the church that more recently the church is much more aware of people with disability and the needs that people have. But I would say that certainly in my childhood and teen life, the institutional church, if we can call it that, paid lip service to what were the effective needs. You would very rarely meet a priest with a disability, for example. You'd certainly not see the church ordain one, although now that has changed. And it is to be commended, providing it's being done on merit, not just sort of its tokenism. And the one good thing about the church is nothing is done on tokenism.
Overall, Sean says, the challenge is, as with everything, to get on with life.
To try and get big institutions and organisations to realise that they have to cater for the needs. And that really is what the blind service is about. For example, in Britain, of the blind population we know about, 75% have some form of useful vision, whether it be central or peripheral, and would look at using large print. When you translate that to church life, why is it that Catholic publishers print in the smallest print, yet we know from our congregations, the majority of people are older, wearing spectacles, would welcome clear print, doesn't have to be large, but it has to be clear. So typeface is important. And then to consider larger print. And the blind service launched the mass sheet every week in large print.
However, Sean explained, for an ordinary publisher, this operation would be both expensive and complicated for more reasons than one.
So the blind service, we launched it. We launched it with no money, used our savings, personal savings, myself and a couple of other friends, put it together with the help of a Catholic publishing company, and then we took it over ourselves within 3 years. We design it, we do the layout, we print it, and we distribute it. And last year, we took the plunge of printing it in Slovakia. We design and print in Slovakia, where we save money, but we give Slovak people the opportunity of doing the work.
So, one of CBS's main aims is to assist in the provision of suitable material and resources for worship prayer. But, Sean says, it is also deeply involved in advocacy.
CBS isn't just about the production of the large print mass sheet, as we call it. We're a service, first of all. We're not a membership organisation. I felt that the church has enough membership organisations to last a lifetime. And they're dying out in many cases because we can't get people to take on the role of committee membership, etc. And I felt that the service, if it was membership, would miss out on the vital tool of evangelisation and mission. Because if you have membership, you're guaranteeing usually a committed body of people who are coming from the benches in church. And I believe CBS has got to reach out. It's got to answer the call of Tertio Millennio Adventi, of putting out into the deep and really going out for those people that are marginalised. So advocacy begins with the challenge of every Christian to bring others back to Christ.
The fact is, the large print mass sheets help those who are already there.
I'm hoping that it will attract a few more people to become more involved in the church, because they'll see that this local church has the large print mass sheet and that that church also produces its newsletter in large print. Therefore, we've done our first little bit of evangelisation to people who are already in the church, as on a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. The next stage of advocacy has to be, we now have to reach out to those who don't come. Why don't they come? Have they been offended by the attitude of the people or the parish priest? Have they been offended like any other parishioner might be and taken the huff because of a clash of personality? Has there been a dilemma in that's questioned faith, death or injury? And the usual things that then prevent people from practicing. If we invite them to church, what are we inviting them to? Yes, we're inviting them to an encounter with Christ. But when we invite people to an encounter with other people, as in a social evening, whether it be cheese and wine, cup of tea, there is something that attracts you and helps you to maintain that social network. If it's a Bible study group, if it's a mother's union group, there's activity. When you are denied the use of one of your senses, and the other senses allegedly compensate, in that compensation, there has to be something tangible for the person to latch on to. For a deaf person, they, and I hope the deaf community will forgive me if I get this wrong, will latch on to the welcoming aspect, that people genuinely want them there. And the same in the blind community. The blind community, though, will be fed up of all these talks on Monday evenings about the faith, people going home with sheets of paper and books to read.
And that can be a daunting perspective.
And we've got the double whammy of listening twice as hard, remembering it all, and trying to do the homework that goes with it. So RCIA, distance learning programs, you name it, these are fantastic, but they come at a price. And then here's the advocacy. The parish priest rings CBS. Can you do something? Yes, but then we have to charge him, and he doesn't like it, because CBS gets no money. It's all donations, and we don't get many of them. And the large missile makes about a 10% surplus in the year. None of us take any money for what we do. We're using our own time, our own efforts, our own computers, our own office, everything. We don't have that money. In the advocacy, we hope that someone will spread the word and then that person comes back to church. That strengthens CBS again, because the next person does something, the next person does something, but at the same time, financially, they help us. And then we have the tape services. We do provide some tape services. the various Lent and Advent programs that come out in little booklet form, we have in the past recorded them. But usually we're up against time. They arrive to us 10 days before Advent begins, and we have the job of reading them and annotating the text so that it fits an audio audience, not a printed audience. And that is difficult. There are one or two projects I'm looking at now, 3 months in advance. We're now in Advent, and I'm looking at Lent and Easter. I have to be so far in advance. So I have to switch off and say, what Sunday am I on when I go to church? As opposed to, what Sunday am I on a Thursday afternoon when I'm proofing the text?